Red Priest is swashbuckling, extroverted, scandalous. Energetic adjectives for a harpsichord, cello, violin, and recorder. The quartet has cut a wide swath through the Baroque music world, as you can tell from the titles of some of their programs: Priest on the Run, Nightmare in Venice, The Red Priest, and The Virgin. It's not your high school English teacher's Baroque Music Quartet. The group was founded in 1997 by Piers Adams, who the Washington Post has called the ringing recorder virtuoso of our day. And Piers Adams has leapt the barricades into our studio all the way, I believe, from Idaho was your last port of call, right?
It certainly was.
But home is England.
It is.
Well, welcome. Welcome
to
the show.
Much.
We're delighted to have you here. You formed the group Red Priest. You are the founder. Where does the name come from?
The name relates to the composer Antonio Vivaldi, who was obviously a very famous composer in his day. He was a priest as well as being a composer and a violinist, and he had red hair. They called him Il Prete Rosso, the Red Priest. And we just loved that combination of words. It was very evocative to us, coupled with the fact that Vivaldi was a very extravagant performer himself, quite a maverick. And we felt it suited our group rather well.
Now, I went to some Baroque music performances years ago as a student in Cambridge, England. And I confess that at the time I felt very grown up, but sort of as if I was reprising an E.M. Foster Howard's End sort of moment, and that I was going to bat my eyelashes at a university student. It seemed a bit formal, staid. But I gather that you have an entirely different interpretation.
Well, Baroque can be many different things. You know, of course, there are those who want to play it in a very serious way, and there's some very serious music from that period. But, you know, we tend to forget that people in the olden days were having fun. They were like us, and they weren't all serious and earnest and wondering how they should do it. They were just experimenting, doing their own thing. And you read descriptions of people from those days. Description, for instance, of the violinist Corelli, who, when he performed, he was so carried away with what he was doing, you couldn't recognise him. His eyes turned bright red. You know, it's suggestive of, you know, more like the Rolling Stones than maybe the experience you had in Cambridge.
So let's hear something from your latest CD called Pirates of the Baroque, Stolen Masterworks and Long-Lost Musical Jewels performed with swashbuckling virtuosity. Let's listen. What are we listening to?
This is the second movement from a sonata called La Barrasca, which is a sea storm, by a very little-known composer called Giovanni Paolo Simonetti. In fact, I have to confess at this moment, he's so little-known he didn't actually exist.
Made him up?
We didn't make him up, actually, although we did make up some of the stuff on this album. But we had this idea of musical piracy in its many forms, both in terms of people stealing, other people's themes, just the art of rearrangement is a mild form of piracy, but also the idea of people using other composers' names. And there are a couple of instances on this album, and this one actually was a piece of fake Baroque music, but it's a really rather good one.
Now, you actually met the man who calls himself Giovanni Paolo Simonetti. How did that happen?
Well, I was in a bar in Germany with someone who knew him. Knew that the guy who actually wrote this music, he's a German musician and composer called Winfried Michel. And I wasn't really aware of the whole Simonetti story at the time. I was vaguely aware of this piece of music. And he said, oh, that guy over there, he's Simonetti.
And you thought maybe he was 300 years old.
Yeah, maybe. But no, he was about 40 at the time, I think.
Well, getting back to your recorder, Mr. Recorder Player, could you give us a demonstration? You've got, I wish people could see, quite an assemblage of recorders there, ranging from things about 10 inches long to something that looks almost like the alto saxophone.
Yes.
Made out of wood, however.
Yeah, no, that's right. Well, the first thing about the recorder is it does come in lots of shapes and sizes. So if you're a recorder player, you don't just play one. You have to play the whole range, and that's part of the interest and excitement of it. What we have here ranges from the bottom of the one of the largest instruments. So your lower notes here. It's nice and mellow, so nice, rich, bassy tones up to the top of the tiny instruments.
Wonderful. And then you've got everything in between.
Everything in between, and the most common size is the alto recorder.
I understand that you often play two of those at once in concert.
Yeah, I can play two records at once. This is sort of partly just for for showmanship, I guess one would say. But, you know, when we're arranging music for our group, we're often arranging orchestral music, which has a lot of parts in it, and there are only four of us in the group. So we have to be very creative in finding ways to get all the lines of music to work. So occasionally I might have to do something like this.
I've never seen two recorders play together. Two tin whistles sometimes in Irish music. But did you appropriate it from Irish music?
No.
Did you steal it?
Maybe. Actually, no. If you go back to ancient cave drawings of, you know, Etruscan art, you actually see people playing double pipes, two pipes at once. It's something that, you know, goes back an awfully long way. I don't know of any written instances in Baroque music, but certainly in modern recorder music, it's a fairly conventional technique now.
I just want to ask you, we have really been, you know, sort of frenetic here in this conversation. Do you ever give the audience a break and play something a little slower?
Oh, sure we do, yes. I mean, I think it's very important. The contrast is key, really, to everything that we do in as many ways as we can. For instance, one of our favourite concert pieces at the moment is called Senti lo mare, Listen to the Sea, again, on the nautical theme. And this is the first movement of a little sonata, a little-known sonata by Giuseppe Tartini. And we made an arrangement of this to include a few sea noises.
That is absolutely lovely.
Thank you.
Just lovely.
It is a wonderful tune, actually. We found it very inspiring, that the beauty and the simplicity of that tune, and then the thought of the sea coming in and out, which...
You said you had the sea. We hear that at the beginning of the piece. Is that musical orchestration or something else that you've used for that effect?
No, it almost
sounds like people breathing.
Yeah, I was blowing into the finger hole of a tenor recorder.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the closest we could get.
Yeah.
Again, we're just trying to use whatever facilities we have at hand to produce the effect that we want, and that was the best we could come up with.
It's haunting. It's haunting. Well... We hope that you'll be back in the United States soon. I know you're concluding your tour here this time out, but thank you so much for coming in.
It's been a pleasure. Magical
speaking with you.
Thank you.
Piers, would you just take us out on something here in the studio before you leave?
Sure, yes. Maybe a little bit more on the bass recorder to demonstrate the mellow tones of that instrument. This is just the opening of a sonata by Handel.
That's Piers Adams of Red Priest. You can find their new CD on their website, redpriest.com, and to see them in concert, check out our website, npr.org/music. That's All Things Considered. From NPR News, I'm Jackie Leiden.